Can't read my own writing. Okay, before the act was passed, we had some hearings, so-called, pertaining to the act. Feelers, if you may. I was called a wise guy by Mr. Udall because for contradicting his program. Seems odd. We are again questioned. How was it? Is it working? How bad? Something tells me we don't know where we should be by now, if not why. Weaknesses, I say, in the act. Why isn't it working? To the ultimate benefit of those the act was intended for. Why was such a weak political, why such a weak and political lawyer intended program to start with, using the very people it was intended to help as pawn to sufficient to the desires and profit of the politicians, lobbyists, and lawyers. I hope you with very good business insights, you will succeed. I feel strongly we will lose our subsistence right to use our wildlife eventually. I really feel that. The opposition is so strong, too strong. Your top moneymakers are backing up the preservationists to the tune of millions and millions of dollars. The very people you watch on TV every day and listen to, name them all. One woman gave $50 million to the preservationists to help deprive you of your right to eat this resource that I'm talking about. What are we doing? I say nothing. Prolonged agony is why I must be on the board of game. I feel lonely sometimes. A one-man battle. I have been told I will go before God with the blood of the wildlife on my hand for upholding your right. Thank you.
Good speeches. I don't know if I can top those out. I won't try to, that's for sure. My name's Paul Olden. I'm from here in Galena. I wrote up a page and a half on an economic impact, political impact, and social impact of what I've seen. Excuse me. Economic impact. We still have unemployment, no jobs. It's pretty hard to get jobs. Our biggest concern is no investment opportunities, with the exception where there's commercial fishing and timber. Not enough capital for long-term, low-return investments. Most of our corporations have put the bulk of their money in the money market accounts or saving deposits. Timber is abundant around here, but no transportation system. Village corporations have no subsurface rights. No professionally trained native people. Large amounts of our monies go to lawyers, accountants, and other paid professionals. Our economic activities are subsistence with a little cash mixed in. And those two are very hard to intertwine. The people are receiving more services, electricity, telephones, water and sewer, gasoline for motors, cars, snowmobiles, motorbikes, and there's no way that people can pay for those on a subsistence lifestyle. Political impact. They were started for five main objectives: to eliminate reservations, to turn over Native affairs to the state of Alaska, to make Natives subject to state control without federal support restrictions, to end the trust status of Native lands so they will be fully taxable and alienable, to end special federal health, education, general assistance for all Natives. We do have traditional governments, they do exist, but they receive monies from the state with restrictions on them. More Natives are migrating to regionalized centers like Galena and McGrath, Fairbanks, with social impact. To date, Native people have enjoyed a few advantages, a very few. Some Native leaders are respected through economic power and positions. They use those to their advantage and to the disadvantages of some Natives. We have more social control, more social mobility, and we can almost choose our direction, how we want to see ourselves in the future and how we're going to get there. These corporations are altering our lifestyles by Western corporate values and competitiveness, assimilation, and acculturation. So my conclusion to my testimony is we have to get educated to understand to what we want and how to get it. Thank you.
Could you leave that with me by any chance, just so we have it part of the record?
My name is Roger Huntington. I was reluctant to come up here, and Max twisted my arm. I was reluctant to come up here because I can remember just not too many years ago, fairly recently, when John Seiberling and Morris Udall was very nicely situated over on this wall over here, to which he was listening to our appeal for Native concerns. Since then, and even prior to then, I've sat into hearings, both Fairbanks and participated in them in Anchorage and Juneau. And I've come to the conclusion they are fruitless, wasteful of our federal dollars, wasteful of my time, and everybody else's here. Because no one pays attention, because your reason for being here has already been established. Your decision to be made has already been made. All you are is an answering to, and I'm not blaming you, I'm blaming the system. The question has been put into law, and you're answering to some little paragraph in some law that says you got to see what happened as a result of history. You know, and that's about all I want to say in that aspect. As it relates to the Native land claims, I feel maybe it was designed to bring chaos to order. I don't know. But I think that as a result of land claims, chaos has occurred. We didn't have the problems of land ownership. We didn't have problems of title, who belongs to what, whose fish camp is this and whose fish camp is that, you know? I know we gotta go on, and we gotta go on to prevailing system, and that's the prevailing system of the Constitution of the United States. And with closing, I'm proud to be an American. And I'll fight for my Americanhood. But I hate it when people say Indians come first, because I'm an American. And I'll stick up for that. And I'll sign up when there's a war or anything like that. I'll be the first to sign up if I'm not privileged to be the first. But thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Berger. The Land Claims Act is something that happened to come along in this generation of time. That's the way I see it. If I was doing something of my own decision and I was in a situation where I had to do something and I made a mistake and I still had to keep going, I'd turn around and correct that mistake and try to make the best of the situation. Whichever way it was going to come out, I'd work real hard to look at it and appraise it and say, yes, I really did my best and I'm satisfied. I can leave that situation behind and go on to the next. I can forget it. I don't have to drag it along. I can forget it and keep going, looking at the future. We can look at the land claims bill the same as I have a store up the road, my wife and I, and I can go through that store like I was when I was in the Army. We used to have to stand inspection every Saturday morning at 6 o'clock, and if we didn't pass inspection, we didn't get a pass to go to town. Had to stay on the base and work over the weekend. And so what the military is saying that, well, if you didn't do your job the way we expected that you should be able to do it, you're going to have to do it over again and on your own time this time. When I look at the land claims bill, and it's my own personal belief and feeling, and that's what causes me to live the best way I can, I look at the people that worked on the Land Claims Act from the side of the United States Congress, the people that was elected and put there by the people that owned the government, people of the United States, and then the people that tried to represent as best as they could this segment of the population of the United States, the people of Native people of all the Native people of Alaska combined. Those representatives voiced for us their collective knowledge and intelligence and tried to approach it with the best wisdom that they could pull together to meet our whatever our feelings and whatever we had voiced through meetings. I don't know how it came about, but however it came about, it's already happened. And I look at that bill, and although there's just as many mistakes in it as if myself and my imperfection, I think we need to accept it and go on. And I think we need to accept it in the sense that as we go on, we'll work the opportunities that are in it and work the strengths in it. And I say that for this reason, because if I had to do a job and I was all alone, there was nobody around to help me, and I kept looking at the size of that job and looking at my weaknesses, I think I'd fall over before the job ever got done. Either that or I'd be too scared to attempt to try to do the job because I'd feel my weaknesses overcome me. On the other hand, if I looked at my strengths before I did the job, I think I'd rally my strength up and just fly right through the job and go on to the next one. And I think we can look at the land claims bill collectively as a people in unity. We can look at that bill the same way. And if we want to, that bill is us. That land claims bill is us. It's us collectively because we allowed the people that represent us to represent us in unity. So we're saying that if that land claims bill is no good, our decision is no good, because our decision to let those people represent us then is no good. It's on to us. Each one of us individually has something to offer. Strength, some kind of strength. When the Land Claims Bill was started in 1971, when it was signed, I remember the hall out at APU. I was there, my wife and I were there. There was a lot of people from around here there. I remember there was a lot of cheering when the president said that he signed the bill. Everybody was really happy. They felt they had reached a new milestone. I also remember at the meeting last fall, at the AFN meeting, Senator Stevens, in his talk to the AFN body, Alaska Federation of Natives body, he said that we have worked together in the past to implement the bill, we've worked in the past to change the bill, and we can keep working to change the bill as it meets our needs. If we look to our weaknesses, how are we ever going to know our needs unless we look to our strengths? And when we need our strength and some of it isn't there, we say, oh, that's a weakness. Then we'll know what to do. In 1971, I was living here in Galena. I just moved here when the bill was signed. I had come here because my family and I wanted to come back to the village, back to the river. And we also wanted to have a little business of our own. I had been working for different lumber companies, and I liked working behind the counter and selling merchandise, so that got into my blood, and I wanted to have my own store. And I also saw the need for people building log homes, looking for insulation, windows and doors, that they could get that need right here. So I had some understanding of business, but very little compared to what was designed with the bill to implement it successfully. What I mean is that if you look in 1971, right in this area, there was nobody that I know of living in Galena or in this Gunnayu area that had owned and operated a corporation, a person that owned and operated a corporation, or a group of persons that owned and operated a corporation. I'm referring to this as persons, as Native people, Indian, Athabascan, Eskimo, whatever was in this area. There were people here, individual Native people, that had their own store. Sydney built boats for sale. He worked for a living, but he built boats for sale, but that was a proprietorship. Jimmy Huntington had run a grocery store up in Cutoff. John Sackett had a store, and there was a few other people had their own little stores or businesses that met the community needs. And the community needs were not highly the industrial wheel, the industrial economic wheel. In fact, they weren't even we didn't even look to get economic means out of social activities. By that I mean there was no, and there still isn't any tourist industry here in Galena, in this area. There's no tourist industry. The means of, the economic means of this area has always been what we've put a handle on as subsistence off of the land today. I don't know where the name subsistence came from. It's been Greek to me for a long time. But it was always understood that everybody makes a living off of the land. If you lived in this Yukon River Valley, in this area, and you used as much land as necessary, and you respected the other guy's trap line, you stayed the heck off of it. And everybody made a living that way, fished during the summer, and you'd get your own fish out of it, sell what you didn't need, get wood in the fall, and the cycle kept on with the seasons. And then here comes the land claims bill, and it says that it created a village, a corporation for that particular village entity, which means the people, the native people living in that village as a community, are now hereby responsible to run this corporation successfully. And they, and it's also in the bill that you cannot use or you cannot have any other board member on that corporation than native blood that's registered into the Land Claims Act. So the leadership of the corporation, except for some hired expertise, if they could think of it, it's got nobody with corporate experience to run a corporation. So in a sense, the weakness, one of the weaknesses of the bill that we had to face with is that the government created a situation where you have the blind leading the blind. You have people endowed with the responsibility of running a corporation, and they say, okay, you, you're the ones that never had any experience to run a corporation, you're on the board of directors, you're going to run this corporation. And all the people that are stockholders in this corporation, even if they made suggestions and everybody tried, still they don't have any corporate ability either. At best, all we had was proprietorship ability and in a very limited amount. And if it looks like the corporation is crawling, practically crawling in its terms of forward movement, I think that's because in reality it is. We are crawling. But we're going slow because if we went too fast, we'd trip over ourselves. We don't have the experience of the modern corporate world. Besides that, we want this corporation to carry our character and our personality. Although that corporation has to be self-perpetuating, it also has to, if it's going to be us funneling our energy through this corporate structure, this corporation is got to be just like us, because it's just like an artist painting a picture. It's going to have his visions in it. So this corporation has to bring into existence, into physical existence, our visions of the future. And if our visions of the future are going to be looking at our weaknesses, then that corporation is going to be putting into existence our weaknesses. If we want that corporation to be strong, we have to implement our strengths. And that's the way I see the future of the corporation, in nuts and bolts. We could talk mechanically about it, about all our investments, about the services, about whatever the corporation offers. But if we only work and meet each day doing our best to exist as a unitized people, working with the same tool together and funneling all our energy through this same tool to improve our economic and social existence, I think we can look back with pride instead of look back and say that, you know, I wish this hadn't occurred. I think we could lay around and turn over in bed and turn over in bed and weep in the grave and everything, but the thing has already happened. And I think the right thing to do from here is just do the best we can. And as I said before at our annual meeting, I think if ever there was a year for and a year and a time for people to begin working together structurally and respectfully and with a positive vision and for the future, I think that the time is now. Thank you. I'll answer any questions if you have some questions.
Well, Mr. Hundorf, I understand you're the president of the corporation established under ANCSA for the people here at Galena.
Yes, I currently am. The board has elected me.
I understand that corporation consists now not only of the people here at Galena, but that it represents a merger with other village corporations in this area.
Yes, that's right. It does. It the villages of Galena, Kaikuk, which is about 32 miles or 30 miles or so downstream from here, west of here, and further west, Nalato, about another 18 miles, and further west, Caltag, generally west, that is, another 30 or 35, 40 miles. The people in this area pretty much live together as what I personally term as a large family. They are pretty close together, and that's what makes life beautiful in this area. And even so, for the whole area up the Kaikuk River and up the Yukon, this whole Doyon area, pretty much the people live and work together. But economically, we decided that in order to survive, economically survive and put what little strengths we had together, that if we didn't merge, we would have less strength because, you know, the old saying, divide and conquer, united we stand. If collectively we could put whatever strengths we had, we could make the thing work from that point, also from the point of having to run one corporate office instead of four, and the opportunity to work together again as one group of people to work together would give us more strength. You know, instead of a three-dog team, we have a six-dog team, and you have more strength, pulling strength. Well, I think that's what was our basic theory. And the people, about 98 or 99% voted to merge, so it wasn't a very questionable situation of whether or not we wanted to merge.
How many shareholders do you have now?
Pretty close to 1,100, I believe.
1,184,
pretty close, 1,200.
And since merger, when was merger? What year was that?
78.
And since merger, has the corporation, as a combined entity, been more or less successful than the four corporations used to be when they were on their own?
I think pretty much without question, yes. It's more successful now.
One of the problems that keeps coming up everywhere we go, and we've been to 18 villages in Alaska now, in every region, is the question, well, can the corporations provide employment for people locally? When ANCSA came in, a lot of Native people thought that it would mean they would be able to get jobs locally with the corporations. Now, that just hasn't worked out that way in most places. Have you been able to provide any jobs locally for Native shareholders here?
That's kind of a the way I answer questions might be pretty lengthy, but I'll try to shorten it up as much as I can the way I see it.
Take your time.
Because number one, I think we have to look at a combination of things in order to get an understanding. To me, if you're going to do something, you have to understand it. So I look at the key to life as understanding. And our lifestyle in this area has never been one of high economic activity, I mean by way of jobs, okay, before 1971. And maybe it gradually changed to some kind of a job economy here in Galena, with the start of the base in 1940 or 41. Sidney probably addressed that pretty well since he was of age and working pretty hard then already, you know, and lots of others, Jimmy. But I was just about 6 or 7 years old then. And so the things that I remember living in Nolato, we're living in Nolato, and although my dad was postmaster and commissioner, other than that, there wasn't any other jobs in the community. The local store was run by a family that owned it, you know, and the school was a mission school. It was run by the sisters and the father there, and they were volunteers to the community. There was just wasn't any work. And all the work that we grew up with was, like I said, you build the fish wheel in the summertime, run the fish wheel, put up fish. You took what you needed out of it and sold the surplus part and used that to keep, you know, bread on the table and then get wood in the fall. And you went out and got your own wood supply and then you sold some of that and then was ready to start trapping. You start trapping and then it was back into summer to the fish wheel. And everything was serve yourself, work for yourself. It was self-employment. It was really self-employment. And some of that's still going on today. And people still want that lifestyle. Okay? A lot of people voice that they still want to go out trapping. We're constantly fighting. Like Sydney's on the game board. We're looking for ways to make it, to preserve the game that we need every day. And so on and so forth, you know? I mean, you can... Okay? Then from the industrial aspect of it, there is nothing going on here that's manufacturing anything. Oh, we have fishing now, a little bit about maybe a month or two of commercial fishing where they can sell fish or parts of it, you know. So there's some economic activity. We've got air transportation and stuff, you know. But as far as industry, there isn't too much where stuff is being manufactured, like somebody is making furniture and we have a worldwide market for furniture or something like that. There's nothing like that around here. Our transportation, the expensive transportation system we have doesn't keep us economically competitive on the world market, so we can't have it. The other thing was, when the corporation was first formed, when we first was going to merge, and we're talking about a merger, we invited people to come in and try to share some of their experiences and knowledge with us to help us so we could make as best a decision as we could whether or not to bring the issue to a vote on whether to, not to merge, to consolidate. Pat Sweetser will correct me when he gets up, I'm sure. One gentleman by the name of Perry Eaton then said, you know, that there's something that we should look at. And that still sticks in my mind from time to time. It comes up. I think it's very important. Is that he says that the corporation should be doing things that don't already exist in the community. Services that already exist, that are already ongoing and going effectively and successfully, that's fine. Leave them alone if they're going good. If the corporation is going to do something, it should find something different to do. Some services that are not already being offered. And you have to remember, again, at the situation at the time, there was nobody with corporate ability around. And there wasn't any economists or financial wizards around to tell us how to approach an issue so that everybody could participate in it and come out more financially healthy than they were yesterday, and the corporation could still be perpetuated, self-perpetuating. There's nobody around to provide those kind of answers. And even today, 13 years later, although we've grown a little in our knowledge and experiences, and we have some expertise hired, we're still moving at a crawl. And I think that's probably well and good, because this way we are constantly able to maintain a positive balance. If we started to run, we'd get so we're breathing hard and get shaky and be easier to knock over, easier to fall down or trip ourselves. And so it's a long process. I see it as a very long process. This and lots of this job economy is not going to come only from the corporation. The corporation is only one entity in a community. Each person in a community is an entity unto themselves. And so each person has something to contribute positively. And there's opportunities here. We just have to be able to visually see them and take them into hand. And I think, you know, as far as answering for somebody on the other side of the world, I mean, we'll do the best we can to give them our best opinion, whichever way it is, you know. Everybody's got their personal opinion, and I hope they can use this. And I feel that this sharing of opinions and information here today is just as good as for us right now in this present time as it is for whoever is going to help it, whoever's going to use it. Because another thing I experience is when I give to help somebody, I think I help myself more than I help the person. That's always been my experience. Do you have any other questions?
No, not right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hundor.
Okay.
I think that it's important for me, all the people all over the state of Alaska, you know so much about the idea of what are your thinking come 1991, their age, or however, as to when we lose our share, so when we came to the corporation,
could I just for the record repeat Mr. Sidney
sure.
Huntington's question? He asked Mr. Hundorf what his thinking was about 1991. Should the people retain their shares or should they sell them or what?
You know, I remember what Ramsey Clark said at the AFN convention last fall. I can't remember everything he said, but there was two things he said. That he said, the land claims all it was ever meant to be was an opportunity. That's all it was ever meant to be. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to help ourselves. And that opportunity, he also said, is what we're going to make of it. And I look at my life, and my life is whatever I'm going to make of it. So if we work collectively as a people, positively, the land claims bill will be to us and to our future generation whatever we make of it. He also said, 1991 is today. 1991 is right here, right now. That's today. For a long time, I felt that if, when this issue started to come up, it troubled me. Being on the board of directors at the time for the corporation, and then being the president, even more because. Being president of this corporation, I'll be honest with you, I'm still wondering how to do my job. And I come to work every day saying, well, I know I'm going to do the best I can, and when I get there, my gosh, there's plenty to do. So I forget about wondering how I'm going to be president. I just do the job as best as I can. And I constantly tell myself when it meets with dissatisfaction to the people, hopefully they'll come and let me know. And when my time is up, there'll be somebody that can pick up the ball and go with it. And in the meantime, I hope the corporation is successful, because it means something to every one of us. As far as the issues, the land issue, the people born after 1971 issue, the alienation of stock issue, I think this is something that I would like to see the people work out collectively together, how we feel about it in our area, and then maybe take it statewide. In other words, I mean, if there's going to be changes that have to be made in the bill for us to get what we want, whatever that might be, I strongly feel, with very little doubt, that the AFN is our voice to Congress, our unified voice to Congress. And I look at what Senator Stevens said, that he said, we'll work to help you out every which way we can, but come to us in one voice. Don't come to us in different voices at different times. It makes it hard for us to pinpoint what we're supposed to do. And there's another thing, too, that Morris Thompson said at the Elders Conference here a month or so ago. He asked a question that provoked thought about the land claims. He said, is the land claims bill, did it come about just for this generation here and now? Or did it come about for now and the future, for generations now and in the future? That's also our decision. That's our decision for Gunnayu, for the area that it represents. That kind of a question. If you want, you know, I'm one that I really admire Sydney and Charlie. They can sit down and just write. My gosh, the pen never goes dry. They can just keep writing. I have sat down I don't know how many times and tried to write something to say here today, and the furthest I got was 5 words, and I scratched them out or threw them in the trash can. And I think, you know, people that can think that way have a whole lot to offer, besides the elders, as we call the people today that are our seniors. Have all the experiences of the past that we all have to live through. And if we could take them as knowledge out of the book, in fact, living knowledge, which it is today, and use it, I think we could all benefit in the future. But it'll only come about by unity, by working together, and working together in a positive sense, not picking at and saying, I told you so. You know, to me, that's a very deflating to a person's strength, especially mine. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hondo. Maybe you could just hold the mic, Mr. Evans, so that we get it down on the table.
Here's something I got from an old Indian chief out in the States, Blackfoot chief. He said, the land is not ours to sell or give away, but to pass on to younger generations. They'll take care of the next generation once you get that straightened out in the first place up here. Belongs to the people, and to pass on, it don't belong to them. You cannot claim that land, not there for you. It's for to pass on to posterity, that's your following generations. And all these tribes around here, they were big enough that they had enough land to pass on to their generations, future generations. It is not ours to sell or give away, but to pass on to younger generations, something they can be proud of and continue to cherish that I know is our moral obligation to posterity. And do not ever let the Iran Corporation touch it, claim or claim any land anywhere. After all, the Iran started without any roots anywhere in Alaska. Whatever they touch turns into a you-know-what. The only candidate for governor when they had the last election is, or even mentioned tribal land rights, was Don Wright. So I cast my vote for him, as I knew that tribal ownership and management is of priority importance to the survival of any and all native tribes. You have the land, and if you manage it right, it'll work out itself. You don't have to try to sell it to anybody. It belongs to the tribe. And I think the tribe done a good job of taking care of it before. Go on, I got lots more. I can answer lots more questions.
Thank you, there.
I didn't answer this question. I got sidetracked and building up to it, and I forgot to answer his question. You know, like Sydney and Jimmy said, and whoever else has said that, that's their own personal opinion, and I think that's the way it has to be until we can come together. The way I see coming together, and I think it's a good, to me, it's easier to understand. I cannot do something unless I understand what I'm going to do and why I'm going to do it. And to me, unity is the big thing right now. And unity is where people can work together and put everybody's strengths in the pot and get something done that way. And to express unity the way I envision unity is I put out my hand to shake somebody else's hand and they reach out and shake my hand. So we meet each other halfway. I go.